and they're cloaking this and selling it to people with collectivist terminology and propaganda, and claiming that this is all we all have to come together to save the planet. But really, we're not saving the planet. We're handing it, if we go along with this, we're handing it on a silver platter to people that will destroy it and will destroy us as a species.
You're listening to The Corbett Report.
Welcome back, friends. Welcome back to The Corbett Report. It is the 23rd of November, 2021. And longtime old hands at The Corbett Report will know that I have been trying my best to ring the alarm bell about the green financial swindle for many, many years now. And unfortunately, that has gotten lost in the mix with all of the back and forth with people who are 100% on board with the climate change scam in general. People might know my opinions on that, but that doesn't matter for the purposes of today's conversation. No matter what you think about man's role in changing the climate, you should be concerned about the financial swindle that is underway right now that I've talked about for many, many years. For example, back in 2016, I was trying to ring the alarm bell about the $90 trillion in energy infrastructure investments that were being touted as necessary to save Mother Earth at that time, in my article, my slightly inaccurately titled article on "And Now for the $100 Trillion Bankster Climate Swindle." I was talking a couple of months later about Who Wants to Be a Carbon Trillionaire, noting Inside Climate News and other such organizations being directly funded by the Rockefeller Family Fund. I talked a couple months after that about the second most important bank you've never heard of, referring to the Global Environment Facility that was created at least in part as part in response to a call by Edmund de Rothschild at the Fourth World Wilderness Conference in Denver, Colorado in 1987 to create a World Conservation Bank. I was talking about how and why big oil conquered the world, where you might remember I was bringing up the carbon ration swindle and how that's going to be tied into the new energy economy. 2018, I was talking about Pay Up or the Earth Gets It, talking at that time about how the latest UN IPCC report is saying that we need to put a high price on carbon, ka-ching, ka-ching, for the people who are controlling those controlled and rigged markets. And you might remember 2019, What is the Future of Bankster Finance?, where I was talking about Mark Carney, then the outgoing governor of the Bank of England, and one of his final speeches in that role, talking about the need for the creation of the new energy economy, sustainable, blah, blah, blah. Oh, and by the way, we need $100 trillion in investments in this space. To my mind-boggling amazement, very, very few researchers have taken up this incredibly important field of research, with the notable exception, thankfully, being Whitney Webb of UnlimitedHangout.com. I know you're familiar with her work by now, but we're going to be talking specifically about a couple of articles that she's written along these lines, digging in and really unveiling what is being done right now to create one of the largest, not just a financial swindle, but one of the largest natural resource land grabs in the history of the planet, happening right now, in the name of saving Mother Earth for the benefit of the banksters. So Whitney Webb, thank you very much for writing these articles. Thanks for joining us here today.
Absolutely, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on to talk about this stuff.
All right. Well, I could think of many things that are worth talking about at the moment, but this is one of the most important and one of the most underlooked. So let's take a look at, first of all, just before the Conference of the Parties kicked off in Glasgow earlier this month or late last month, the New York Stock Exchange came out to unveil a new asset class, natural asset companies, that they had developed with something called the Intrinsic Exchange Group. And you wrote about this in an article called Wall Street's Takeover of Nature Advances with Launch of New Asset Class. Tell us about natural asset companies and what the idea here is.
All right, so natural asset companies or corporations are basically a new asset class, as you mentioned, and they're accompanying listing vehicle that allows them to be listed on the stock exchange. So the people behind this are the New York Stock Exchange with this group you mentioned, the Intrinsic Exchange Group, in which the New York Stock Exchange has a minority stake, so they're directly related. But the main people behind the Intrinsic Exchange Group are the Rockefeller Foundation, a venture capital firm called Aberdare Ventures, which is mainly focused on digital healthcare, and the I'm blanking on the third one. Give me a second.
I am too, but, and oh, I just read this.
The Inter-American Development Bank, which is part of the multilateral development banking system, which is very involved in the stuff I've been writing about recently. They, of course, being the arm of that banking system that's focused on Latin America and the Caribbean specifically. And it's no coincidence that it's that bank, because the pilot program for all of these natural asset corporations is currently happening in Latin America, with Costa Rica being the first country on the chopping block. So to speak. So basically, what natural asset corporations are is that they seek according to one of the main people at the New York Stock Exchange behind this, they seek to identify and a natural asset, an ecosystem service, and allow investors to invest in something of intrinsic value that has not been previously monetized before. And so these are things like the ecosystem services through which clean air, clean water is produced, carbon sequestration, among other things. They want to monetize all of this stuff, license access to things in nature that were previously considered to be the global commons, the property of all, and things like that. And basically what they want to do is take control of that. They quantify it. They create a company to manage it. It's so insane. A board of directors, management team, and all of this stuff. And then they give it an IPO, an initial public offering, on a stock exchange. But it turns out the Natural Asset Corporation is just the issuer of this natural asset, and that anyone can buy it, including private investors, sovereign wealth funds. So you can have the sovereign wealth fund of a foreign country buy all the natural assets of another country thousands of miles away, or you could have an asset management firm like BlackRock that already owns so much, extend their ownership even further to things that have not been previously monetized before. That's essentially natural asset corporations in a nutshell. And they view the opportunity, as they call it, as the fact that what they refer to as nature's economy, assigning economic value to nature, allows them to tap into a much larger asset class than the existing economy. So by their estimates, existing assets are at about $512 trillion. Per their estimates, by opening up nature's economy, they can gain access to $4 quadrillion in assets. And that's expressly what they describe as the opportunity here, not the opportunity to save the planet and better manage natural assets or conserve or any of this. The opportunity is, new fodder for the casino, essentially.
Exactly right. It is the casino economy. And hey, what's the best way to, we're continually blowing up this ridiculous financial bubble. How can we expand it another order of magnitude? Oh, I don't know. We'll call it nature's economy and start assigning an intrinsic value to natural processes and natural entities. It's self-evidently a swindle. And you get that, I think, when you go to that Intrinsic Exchange solution page. And you go down to the value captured in a natural asset company, and they start to break down how they evaluate these things. And they're talking about natural production, so obviously things that you can directly monetize, like if you're bottling water and selling it or something, that's, natural production value. But store of value, okay, so a natural equity is a store of value like any other security or monetized asset. The stock of water, timber, biodiversity, okay, I guess you can put some kind of dollar figure on that. Traditional production, risk reduction, that's where you start to get into some very big financial chicanery that can go on there. Counter-cyclical assets, financial asset realization through securitization, so ka-ching, ka-ching for all, of course, the financial gurus who do that for their living. But for me, intrinsic value is just the most, I mean, it's the most meaningless thing to try to assign a specific dollar value to, especially because even in their own, they even admit, we are using intrinsic value as the umbrella for values not yet identified or quantified, as well as values such as cultural, social, aesthetic, spiritual, etc. Okay, well, I think the spiritual value of whatever this piece of land is $18 trillion. Now let's securitize that. I mean, it's totally, it's yeah. just nonsense. But hey, it's nonsense that sounds green and sustainable. So it is a swindle for sure, what is happening right now. But, and actually on that note, I'll just throw in, I don't know if you saw, but Tariq Fancy, who was apparently the key in sustainable investment portfolio manager for BlackRock, wrote this three-part whistleblower series, basically blowing the whistle. Obviously, he's 100% on with every part of the green scam, but he's saying, you know, actually, this is kind of charlatanry, and these people don't really care about saving nature, and this isn't going to help save Mother Earth. Shock, surprise. So I'll throw that in if people haven't seen, read that yet. But beyond the scam part of this is the very real monopolizing of nature and natural resources itself that will be forwarded through this, through the multi-development banks, the multinational development banks, the World Bank, the IMF. Talk about that aspect of this scam.
So part of what we see with natural asset corporations, what we see in some other things I've covered recently, is an effort to completely remake the multilateral development banking system as a way to force countries, specifically in the developing world, to open up and to reimagine, as Larry Fink called it recently, those institutions to force companies to become investment friendly for certain people, but also to sort of continue their existing way of doing business, which in the past has been debt entrapment, to force these countries to adopt policies or accept investors they normally wouldn't accept, move away from using debt to just using basically climate change related or environmental environmentally justified dictates in lieu of debt, so you don't necessarily have to entrap countries in debt anymore. You can just demand because of the perceived urgency of the need to move to net zero or things like that, that these policies be adopted, or these investment projects from foreign investors obviously be accepted. So it's definitely moving from maintaining the existing predatory system in a sense, but moving it to a way that gives a lot more power to private sector entities and really the bankers, essentially, and how to loot and the extent to loot, and allowing them to target things that haven't previously been lootable to be looted. So in the past, a lot of these banks basically force the privatization of state assets. It's what we've seen a lot in the past several years with austerity, right, and the IMF. And things like that, forcing countries to privatize state assets, largely to foreign investors. What you're going to see with this is instead natural assets being, you know, put on the chopping block instead of state-owned existing monetized assets and things like that. It's going to be natural assets that these companies are going to, or that these banks are going to try and force forced to open up and to be, basically sold off to foreign interests. And what's interesting is that the IMF actually has tried this for probably a couple decades now, in Argentina specifically, one of the few countries. Argentina has a very long and storied history with the IMF. But they've been trying for years to do something in Argentina that's a debt for land swap, trying to get essentially a big chunk of southern Argentina, Patagonia, in exchange for debt, which is a part of a broader issue. Since I live not too far from there, there's a lot of very interesting things going on in Patagonia in terms of land grabs and things like that. But that's definitely part of what we will likely see is if this advances to the degree to which they want to take it.
Absolutely it will. And just on that note, since you bring it up, I'll throw in a link to my What is Sustainable Development podcast from a few years ago where I talked about that. I mean, you can't believe they even just flat out say it, but it is called a debt for nature swap. And this has been, they've been trying to shoehorn this in one way or another for decades at this point, but they're really starting to go for it. And this is another key way that they're going to achieve this, the NACs. And as you point out towards the end of the article, the people who will be most victimized by this are some of the poorest, financially poorest people in the world, living in indigenous communities in the developing world, who are going to suddenly find their areas are being privatized, essentially, by these natural asset companies with private investors and BlackRock and whoever else coming in, swooping in and monetizing their own natural resources. It, and all in the name of Mother Earth. You can't dispute this or else you're a horrible right-wing Koch brother, big oil-funded shill, right?
Yeah, well, they're going to frame it as that these institutional investors and these people that behind the NACs are better suited to protect these natural assets than the indigenous communities or local communities that inhabit these areas. And this is part of this UN-backed plan, for example, to what, like 30% of the world has to become protected areas where no one can live. So essentially, a lot of this is focused, again, on the developing world and creating these protected areas, which is going to necessitate that those people are forced off of their land. And in Latin America, there have been efforts to do this by private entities or billionaires. In the case of Chile, it was quite controversial when the founder of North Face, the brand, basically tried to divide continental Chile in half and kicked out a bunch of people there under the name of conservation. You also have the efforts throughout southern South America by the Nature Conservancy, recently led by Henry Paulson himself, former Goldman Sachs and Secretary of the Treasury under Bush, leading that particular entity, also trying to create these protected areas. So they're, you know, it's not just the UN. The UN is essentially saying this needs to happen, but there's different mechanisms and different groups that have been developed to bring about this change. But they're framing it as something that, you know, is good for the planet and all of this, right? But really, it's a neo-colonialist endeavor is probably the easiest way to explain it. And it's really amazing that there aren't more people on the left screaming about this, considering that, you know, this is a very obviously imperialist, predatory, neoliberal agenda. All of those buzzwords are there, and it's, either being glossed over or being applauded by people on the left. It's very disheartening in that sense, but hopefully it'll change.
You don't get it, Whitney. These bankster billionaires and their financial capitalist buddies are on the side of nature this time. I thank God they've seen the light. All right, let's transition then to the other article along these lines that you've written in recent weeks. This one, UN-backed Banker Alliance announces green plan to transform the global financial system, referring to GFANZ, Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero, which was announced at that COP26 in Glasgow earlier this month. Tell us, just in a nutshell, what is the Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero?
All right. The Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero is essentially a grouping, a conglomeration of all of these big banks, asset managers, and asset owners. And they have come together with the shared goal of under the excuse of net zero to create a new system of global financial governance. And a whole new financial system is essentially how they describe it. It's led by Mark Carney, who you mentioned earlier, being the former head of the Bank of England, Bank of Canada. Now I guess he's the UN Special Envoy for Climate Action and Finance, as well as a special advisor, I believe, to Boris Johnson of the UK for COP26, where G-Fans made a big splash as well, but it was actually created earlier this year in April and was launched a lot, but not just by Mark Carney, but by Janet Yellen, Secretary of the Treasury of the U.S., and John Kerry. So it appears to be mainly a U.S. and U.K.-backed enterprise. Also interesting is you have this guy named Nigel Topping in the leadership board. His title is High-Level Climate Action Champion, which is a really fun sounding name, but he's important because he used to be the head of a group called We Mean Business that was climate focused. And if you're familiar with Corey Morningstar's work on Greta Thunberg and her series, The Manufacturing of Greta Thunberg for Consent, We Mean Business is one of the main groups that essentially created the Greta Thunberg figure for the manufactured climate change movement. So it's very interesting to see him there with his illustrious title, which is, hard not to laugh at, but I guess he takes it seriously at least.
Whitney, you can be our high level independent truth champion. So there you go. I give you that title.
All right. Well, I appreciate that. Thanks. So in addition, so that's the leadership with Mike Bloomberg now, who's been added there. Can't remember if I mentioned that or not, but of course, billionaire Mike Bloomberg, below him, these people which are like the leadership essentially of GFANS, you have the principals of GFANS, which includes the heads of Bank of America, Banco Santander, which is like one of the biggest banks of Spain, HSBC, which has routinely been caught, being the money laundering bank for drug cartels and all of that stuff. Don't worry about that. They care about the environment this time. Citigroup, Larry Fink, the head of BlackRock, head of the London Stock Exchange Group, head of the David Rockefeller Fund, which is essentially leading a subgroup of this alliance, which is the Net Zero Asset Owner Alliance. There's a lot of different groups behind this, but really it's the leadership and the principles that we should be looking at, because they're really directing and planning out what this group will do, and with the power of the people, or rather institutions, that form this alliance. So GFANS has a couple of different goals that we can talk about in more detail. So essentially what they want to do, per them, is create high integrity, credible global carbon markets. They had to put all of those things in front of carbon markets. That's pretty telling in and of itself, I would think. As well as what they call creating country platforms, and then this recreation of the multilateral development banking system are essentially their goal, their main goals, near-term ambitions, as they call it. And basically, their focus here is specifically on emerging and developing countries.
What is a country platform exactly, and how does that relate to this?
Okay, so I don't know if you've seen this video or not, but after I wrote this article, John Kerry, who was one of the people that launched this, was speaking at the Bloomberg New Economy Forum, which followed right after COP26, and he's talking about GFANS. He's talking about how he's met with all of the big banks and all of the great philanthropists, which he names as being the David Rockefeller Fund, and Jeff Bezos and Mike Bloomberg. And he says, we have all this money to invest, but how do we deploy that money? We have to deploy that money. He emphasizes that over and over again, that this isn't money to give away. This is money to invest, right? So how do we deploy that money? Well, that's through creating these country platforms, which they describe, and typical, Davos style, is being public-private collaboration and things like that. But if you look at the example they give, which is Mike Bloomberg's Climate Leadership Finance Initiative, if you actually look at what that is, there's really no role for national governments at all. They're really beyond central banks. Central bank is the extent to which government is involved in these country platforms. And essentially, it's a mechanism for stakeholder capitalism. Per their definition, it convenes and aligns stakeholders around a specific issue or geography, a specific area of the world, or a particular concern, I guess. Clean water, carbon sequestration, whatever, something like that. What you're having is creating platforms that make this money deployable using the power of the multilateral development banks, which pop up in there, IMF, and the World Bank, central banks, and then private sector financial institutions, essentially forcing countries to open up to the investment projects and designs of people within or the institutions operating within this GFANS alliance. Essentially, it's a very creative way of marketing this, I guess, because country platform sounds like there's collaboration from the country being targeted, whereas you know, that's quite their involvement is actually quite minimal. And you can kind of tell that from the way John Kerry talks about it, too. He says, you know, we need countries, national governments to basically create the necessary conditions so these investments can take place. And in GFANS, in their report, they emphasize this a lot, that governments need to be pressured to create high-level cross-cutting enabling environments, establish investment-friendly business environments, and pipelines of bankable investment opportunities. Sounds very environmentally focused, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. High-level cross-cutting enabling. What is this gobbledygook? It is just the worst financial vague rhetoric thrown out there to cover up their real intentions.
Well, essentially, it's creating an environment that enables these people to invest in and create projects and take ownership of whatever they want in the targeted country.
I hope people can understand that what we're looking at is this gigantic machine that is being constructed, and every gear in the machine interlocks with every other gear so that it all functions beautifully from the perspective of the people who want to control this machine. So that, for example, you want to bet that these country platforms will decide that one of the best ways to invest this $130 trillion pool that they're apparently creating is going to be the natural asset companies. And how do you get accredited? How do you become a natural asset company? Well, of course, that's going to be controlled by the Intrinsic Exchange Group, which is the Rockefellers and the IADB and groups like that. Or another thing that I'll throw into the mix here is something that I was writing about a couple of weeks ago in my Welcome to the New Economy article, where I noted the Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosures, which is a body created by the Financial Stability Board, which is a subset of the Bank for International Settlements, the Central Bank of Central Banks, that is working out the framework and metrics to measure portfolio and sectoral net zero alignment. So again, it's centralized body of centralized body after centralized body of these banksters and their associates who get to decide, this corporation is doing it right, and oh yes, okay, you've ticked the right boxes, and you don't. They are creating a system where they have the lever of control. You will get access to this $130 trillion we're creating out of nothing. You will not get access because you don't play by the rules. And they'll come up with whatever arbitrary metrics that they want, and then they'll measure and value things via their intrinsic value. Well, we think this rock has $1 trillion of intrinsic value. And that's, we'll give our, you know, here's our framework that we've created for how we've decided that. But they're laughing all the way to the bank at this. And I think the point is not to, no one is taking this seriously, are they? This is just, hey, here's the next fraud. Hey, remember all that collateralized debt obligation stuff that we were doing? Whatever, this is the next one. Everybody pile on board, and I think people are getting the signal here. But again, this relates back to the MDBs and the World Bank and the IMF and how they're going to be part of this system. It, as I say, every piece fits together, and it's all just justified by the name green. Just insert the name environmentally friendly in it, and most people will be on board with this agenda.
Yeah, which is really upsetting because these investments that GFANS is going to push through, a lot of them at least, are going to be actually really environmentally destructive. Probably the best example I can think of is there's a company called Cobalt Metals. That's backed by the great philanthropists Jeff Bezos and Bill Gates, and Mike Bloomberg, who's running GFANZ with Mark Carney himself, as well as Reid Hoffman of LinkedIn. I believe Mark Zuckerberg's on there as well. I mean, it's like all these billionaires are backing it. It's an AI mining firm that is trying to find all of the world's lithium, copper, nickel, and cobalt, because all of that, all of the known reserves of that per this company, are going to be necessary in order to affect or bring about the net zero economy by transitioning to electric vehicles and getting off coal and all of this stuff. Those metals specifically are mostly concentrated in the very countries they're targeting through GFANZ, like Latin America and Africa. And they plan to basically force countries to open up those deposits so that, you know, these this outside investment can mine them and it will be, oh, for the net zero economy, it's fine. If you're familiar with how mines are run in the developing world, specifically copper mines, cobalt mines, nickel mines, all of those, they're extremely environmentally destructive. In the case of, you know, Africa, where there's a lot of cobalt mining in places like the Congo, child labor is used. I mean, it's a horrendous industry fraught with a lot of problems. This can just... you know, for this system they're trying to create here with GFANZ can just force any government they want, really, to open up out of the necessity of net zero. You know, they have the weight of, you know, basically the world's existing financial system behind them and the UN. So they'll have to go toe-to-toe with that to oppose a lot of these investments, and also a reimagined multilateral development banking system that will be targeting them explicitly, along with country platforms, as GFANZ calls them, and all of that, if they, you know, want to keep these particular investors from mining that particular asset or resource in their country. It's totally insane that this is being sold as green. And some of this is actually going on in with seabed mining. The International Seabed Authority, as it's called, another UN-backed group, you know, allowing different governments and also a Lockheed Martin subsidiary to scrape the seabed for cobalt reserves. And they're not liable for any environmental damage per the way their documents have been drawn up. So, you know, these really aren't green investments. They're just being sold that way to the public. But, you know, enough people are buying it, which is unfortunate. But this is really... not even just it's even beyond a swindle. It's taking ownership of the natural world, and it's destroying a lot of the natural resources that have left to be untouched, or, you know, protected areas, exploiting those even further. I mean, it's really beyond.
It really is. And I want to underline that point, because as we've pointed out, this is a scam. This is a swindle. Even Tariq Fancy and all these people are coming out and saying, even the true believers are saying, this is a swindle. I've seen from the inside. I know all these players. They're all charlatans. This isn't about saving Mother Earth. Okay, it is a swindle. But it is more than that, and we have to stress that, because I see the tendency in some people for their eyes to glaze over, okay, so it's some sort of financial thing they're doing and whatever. How does this affect me? I'm a bricklayer in Toledo, whatever. You know, who cares? This is about high finance. This isn't about me. How does this affect the average human being on this planet, Whitney?
Well, I guess it's easier to speak to the effect this is going to have on people in the developing world. Because these are the areas being targeted. You know, I live in a country, for example, in Chile, that has a lot of the world's lithium and a lot of the world's copper. Excuse me. that is going to be targeted in exactly this way. These natural asset corporations are going to come here. And there's already talks about it. If you look at the campaign platforms of the Chilean politicians running in the currently ongoing election here, lots of talks about natural assets and green finance and all of this stuff, a specific focus on that as well, being the region where I live. You know, this is basically going to push a lot of people off of their land, and it's going to be used to meddle in politics on a scale that, you know, I guess the Middle East has seen, you know, back when it was a hydrocarbon-driven economy, but now with these, you know, lithium, copper, nickel, all of that stuff being the new hydrocarbons for this new economy they're trying to make, it's going to be a lot of... it's going to be other countries that are going to be targeted through coups and things like that. And it's really already happened. If you look at Tanzania, there was the death of John Magufuli earlier this year. A lot of people speculated it had to do with his pushback against the COVID narrative. But if you look at the timing of his death about a month before his disappearance, which lasted several weeks before he suddenly died. He had kicked out all of the GMO food trials backed by Gates and other billionaires in his country. And he had also nationalized the largest development-ready nickel mine in the entire world that had previously been owned by Barrick Gold and Glencore. He kicked them both out and then created a joint ownership project with, I think, some group backed by some Norwegian a billionaire. But he was basically trying to have Tanzania have a share in the profits and not have it all be exploited for the benefit of Barrick Gold and Glencore. Essentially. And I think that was probably a major factor in why he had to be removed. And I think, you know, whereas in the past, a lot of people were looking at coup attempts because of, you know, oil flows or pipelines and all of this stuff like we've seen in past decades. This is really going, I mean, we've seen it in Bolivia to an extent, too. People are speculating the coup in Bolivia had to do with lithium. That's what's going to happen now. We're going to see wars over these assets and efforts to bring countries to their knees allow these particular companies like Cobalt Metals and the billionaires backing them to take control of all of these resources. And really, it's a neo-colonialist imperialist project on a massive scale. But, you know... That's just, you know, one angle of this. If we go and we add in, you know, the whole natural asset corporation angle of this, what this means for the regular person, well, a lot of people over the past, I guess, year and a half or so have been throwing around the World Economic Forum phrase, you'll own nothing and be happy. Okay, so what that means in this context is that it's not just what you can own now, you won't own later. You're going to be charged for things that aren't currently monetized. The air you breathe, the water you drink and all of this stuff, your ability to even go walk in a forest is going to be licensed to you by these predatory individuals. And if you look at someone like Jeff Bezos, who comes up again and again in this stuff, he recently talked about how most people in the future won't even live on Earth. They'll live in space colonies. So they'll even license your ability to be on the freaking planet and you'll be in the Bezos gulag in the sky. And if you're a good citizen, you'll be allowed to come visit the planet, like someone visits Yellowstone, was sort of his analogy for it. So essentially, we're allowing the 1% to take complete ownership of the planet and do whatever they want with it. You and I have talked before about how these elites are trying to create an anti-human future, but really, this is, you know, them trying to take ownership of all of really organic life. And there's a lot of different elements to this too, like gene editing. Patenting genes and all this stuff is another angle that needs to be explored as well. But really, this is, a war against life itself. And if you look at, you know, where we're being moved here, the fourth industrial revolution, it's about synthesizing synthetic life with organic life. It's really eliminating organic life on a massive scale. And they're cloaking this and selling it to people with collectivist terminology and propaganda, and claiming that this is all we all have to come together to save the planet. But really, we're not saving the planet. We're handing it, if we go along with this, we're handing it on a silver platter to people that will destroy it and will destroy us as a species. And it's a really it's beyond an existential crisis, even. I mean, like you said in your really excellent recent interview with Robert F. Kennedy Jr., this is really the final battle.
This is it. How could there be anything bigger than this? This is my message to the bricklayer in Toledo who thinks, oh, whatever, who cares? It's just some scams on the fan. No, this is about your ability to live your life. Let's look short term. It's the natural asset companies and the valuation and putting monetization of natural assets that creates the financialization of nature, which, as you say, once you start putting prices on natural processes, you better believe you will be charged for those natural well, we have to maintain and preserve, and, well, that costs money, so you're going to have to... Freedom as a service, as you mentioned parenthetically in one of these articles, that is going to be a part of it, so that is sort of the short-term part of it. The medium-term vision of this is something I laid out a couple of months ago in the newsletter, Absolute Zero, the Global Agenda Revealed, talking about how net zero isn't enough. No, it's going to have to be absolute zero. All air travel will have to stop. All sea travel, cargo shipping and all of that will have to stop until we can replace it all with nuclear-powered cargo ships or something along those lines. New construction will have to stop. This isn't some fringe wingnuts that are talking about this. This is a major organization, UK Fires, that just put this up, that has all sorts of globalist connections, that's talking about the vision of the future. So that's the medium term. And as you say, the long term is ultimately not only the monopolization of the natural resources of the planet, but then the replacing, essentially, of natural organic life with the synthetic, controlled, patented, you better pay for it monstrosities that are coming, of not just genetically modified organisms as we know them, but literally genetic and synthetic creations of all sorts that I don't know how anyone who is genuinely concerned about the planet could be suckered in by this nonsense for a fraction of a second. But if so, wake up. This is about the future, not just of the human species, but of life itself on planet Earth. And it is being handed over to the banksters because they're saying green and waving an environmentally friendly flag. Wake up. This is it. This is the fight. I am fired up about this because I really see this as such a linchpin of the system. The carbon ration cards and everything are going to be the stepping stones along the path to that system of total control. And if we don't start wrapping our minds around this, we lose this game by default. So I am going to urge everyone in the audience to take a look at these articles that we're linking up from Unlimited Hangout and spread this information around to anyone in your life who you think might be suckered in by the, oh good, the UN is on our side now, and oh, they're trying to save the planet. Stop it.
Yeah, no. At the end of one of these articles, I forget which one, I talk specifically about the UN and how there's this public perception of what the UN is and how the UN actually is per the heads of the UN themselves. I quote from a speech given by Kofi Annan when he was head of the UN, and he made the speech, I guess, in 1998, saying that a quiet revolution had taken place at the UN, and now the businesses of the world is the business of the UN, and they don't work with just governments anymore, because there's this public perception that it's national governments all coming together, and it's an international consensus, and most of these national governments are democracies, so it's really an international democratic consensus, and that's not what's happening at all. Basically, the people calling the shots at the UN are philanthropists, billionaires, and the private sector, and the only really real role of governments is to create these enabling environments, which is what we see with GFANs, but this is really something the UN has been doing for a while, and it's really no surprise if you look at that and look at that history why they would back something like GFANs, but maybe it surprises people who tend to maintain, I guess, still that prevailing public perception. But hopefully, by looking at some of these reports, people can start to realize what the UN actually is and how it actually is operating here and what its ambitions are, which are really the ambitions of the people that tell it what to do.
Absolutely right. And if these articles don't go some way towards waking people up on those issues, I really don't know what will. So I am going to direct people there again. And we're also going to direct people to an important series that you're also writing, a three-part series on Moderna, the first two parts of which have already been released. Moderna, A Company in Need of a Miracle, and COVID-19, Moderna Gets Its Miracle. Extremely important doing deep dive research into the Moderna development of the COVID vaccine and how it came along at just the right time, wouldn't you know it, is some extremely interesting information in there. The third part of that article is forthcoming, so we'll leave the discussion, the deep dive discussion on that for a future date, but I hope people will at least get up to speed on the first couple parts, because obviously the COVID entire crisis is part of the sense of crisis that we are being steeped in order to justify all of the things that we're talking about today. If you're not scared, they can't sell you the solution. So
Well, also there's this effort, and I'm sure you've seen it, James, that they're trying to merge climate change with COVID, frame climate change as a health crisis. These claims that climate change is leading to an increase in heart problems just at around the same time that there was increased talk of myocarditis and other issues related to the global COVID-19 vaccination campaign. But also this claim that there was a doctor that diagnosed someone formally with climate change in Canada. And in a recent show of hers, Catherine Austin Fitz brought up the great point. Well, if it's an official diagnosis, you can't officially diagnose someone with something unless, you know, there's codes in the system or the insurer has codes for those things. So that implies that if it's an official diagnosis at the institution, this was actually dealt out at, if the story is really true, then that infrastructure is already in place to diagnose people with climate change related illnesses. And I forget exactly what the nature of the quote was, but a few weeks ago, I tweeted out something from one of the top officials at the World Health Organization talking about how climate change is a health crisis. And all the nurses he's talked to are just so concerned. They're not worried about COVID anymore. They're worried about climate change related illnesses. So, you know, I think there's going to be an increased effort to sort of merge these narratives together to increase that sense of urgency and increase the fear.
I have another story right along those lines. Pastor of Gospel Light Baptist Church in Amherst fined under Health Protection Act. And this is talking about Robert Smith, the pastor of the Gospel Light Baptist Church in Amherst, has been fined for a gathering which contravened the COVID-19 order under the Health Protection Act. Okay, we've seen this story before, right? The summary offense ticket was issued today, November 17th, by the Inspection, Compliance, and Enforcement Division of the Department of Environment and Climate Change after an investigation. Doesn't it all fit together? Yeah, the Department of Health, Environment, Climate Change, whatever, it's all the same, and we're going to start issuing fines based on it is all coming together. And this is why they are changing it from health as a field that, oh, you know, we're providing health services to you, to it is now health is mandated, it's health security. It is the biosecurity changeover that I've been talking about, and that is absolutely part and parcel. Yeah. Of the climate change agenda.
A lot of these agendas, the fourth industrial revolution, being one of them, and this transformation of the global financial system being another, all of this was planned years ago. And basically, you know, COVID was one catalyst, climate change is another excuse, and they're just going to use anything that sticks. You know, if those don't stick, they'll just come up with something else. as a way to sell it, but really they're just looking for a way to sell these huge transformations, I guess, as the Rockefeller Foundation calls it, the Great Transformation, the World Economic Forum calls it the Great Reset. All of these ambitions and plans have been around for years and aren't necessarily linked to these things like COVID-19 or climate change, but they have done that as a way, as a marketing scheme. Really, as a way to get people to sign on and to back it. So I think that's an important distinction to point out, that a lot of these things, these plans precede any sort of public concern about these issues that are, you know, being framed as planetary imperatives and things like that.
Exactly right. Yeah. Now it's a gigantic marketing scheme that has been incredibly successful. Perhaps the most successful marketing / propaganda campaign in the history of mankind. Remains quite to be possibly seen, I suppose. Maybe we can actually get through to some people this time. That, no, I'm not a big oil-funded shill for being worried about the future of the planet, which is essentially the position we've been backed into here, is that if you don't go along with anything that claims to be green, then you're a horrible oil-funded shill.
That's really insane in the context of GFANZ. You don't trust Mark Carney. You don't trust Mike Bloomberg. You're a shill for big oil. Okay.
you don't trust the Rockefellers? You're a shill for big oil. What?
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
Now, people that believe that at this point have just given their brains and bags over to the billionaires and are like, I don't want to think anymore. I just want to feel superior and feel like I'm doing something. But the people that are in that camp, you know, this is why this makes me so angry, because the people that are going to suffer in the developing world, out of sight and out of mind, the people that like buy into these agendas are going to be like, oh, cool. Yeah, we're going to have more electric cars here while you're totally exploiting and destroying the lives of people in Africa and Latin America. So you can like feel better, feel like your existence is more green when it's actually not. I run out of words for it because, you know, I live in a country that is heavily mined, and the entire north of Chile is an environmental disaster because of the mining industry. I used to live and work in Peru, in one of the most intensely mined areas there. Pete, locals would try and rise up and do something. The military would come in, put bags on the heads of people and push them off cliffs. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that the mining industry does down here. And you're going to, you know, remake the system to make it even more predatory, just so you can have more electric cars and feel better because all of your neighbors have Teslas now. You know, people like that, I can't really hide my disgust anymore, because you're not making the world greener. You're making yourself feel better. And you're, like I said earlier, you're giving the natural world and the livelihoods of lots of disenfranchised people and people soon to be disenfranchised over to predatory bankers that are responsible for the actual environmental crises that the world is facing.
This is it. Yeah. Some people are handing their brains in bags over to the billionaires. I feel like I've dashed my brains against the brick wall for a decade trying to get anyone to pay attention to this issue. But thankfully, as I say, thankfully you're digging your teeth into this. You've uncovered some incredibly important information here, and we can only skim the surface of this in a conversation. So I hope people go read, follow the links, and actually wrap their minds around what is going on. Whitney Webb, I think we'll leave it there for today, but thank you for doing this, and thank you for helping to spread the word.
Absolutely. Thank you, James.